Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
U.S. General Ken Keene's humanitarian invasion of Haiti ramps up, and the nation begins to step back from the brink.
We will increase our capacity, both within the number of troops, but as importantly with the logistical vehicles and enable us to get out to the much-needed areas.
Meanwhile, aboard the USNS Comfort hospital ship, Naval Surgeon Tim Donahue says his patients are resting comfortably.
Our youngest patient is now 72 hours old, and our oldest is 82.
Generals and hospitals in Haiti on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. It's Thursday, January 21st. I'm back in the saddle here in New York City. And The Takeaway, Miles O'Brien in for Celeste Headlee. It seems to be, are we approaching a critical threshold in Haiti where things begin to improve? Maybe we're getting there.
Maybe so. You know, 24 hours ago, there was an aftershock. You have to wonder how many people are sleeping indoors in Haiti right now.
Indeed. Well, we're going to get right to the top stories we're following this morning, including I had the pleasure yesterday of speaking to the highest-ranking military officer in the U.S., the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. And I asked him how much the difficulties of the Haitian government in the wake of this earthquake have held back the arrival of medical supplies in a time of really critical moment-to-moment need in Haiti.
I'm not aware of the impact, the difficulties the Haitian government has had in standing up. I mean, it was in great part decapitated by this. They lost a lot of senior people. They also lost a lot of ministries. So it's in its own way trying to stand back up as well. So I haven't seen them impeding progress here. We certainly are in touch with them about what's going on. And again, there's a big international medical effort right now. And literally as we speak, a little more than a week after the earthquake, while we still have a long way to go with food, a long way to go with water, a great emphasis right now is being placed on getting the medical help out there. There are clear challenges, significant challenges, that remain on the medical side that we're really trying to break through.
The chairman of the Joint Chiefs talks to The Takeaway. We'll have more from my interview with Admiral Mike Mullen in just a moment.
Aside from the aid Admiral Mullen spoke of, more U.S. troops are also on the way to Haiti. Right now, some 11,000 soldiers are in and around Haiti, with another 2,000 Marines heading to the earthquake zone soon. Lieutenant General Ken Keene, the commander of the U.S. military effort in Haiti, describes the mission this way.
We're building this airplane while it flies.
Meanwhile, docked at the Port-au-Prince Bay, the USNS Comfort is treating some of the worst-off patients. The naval surgeon on board is impressed with how long many badly injured Haitians were able to hang on.
The fact that they've made it, you know, 7 days out, 8 days out with these injuries and they're still here just speaks, you know, worlds towards how resilient, you know, they are.
But in the disaster zone that is Port-au-Prince, the scene remains desperate with limited supplies and doctors. This aid worker says some of the deaths she's seeing at a makeshift hospital are hard to take.
Harder when they come in conscious and begging you to save them. And there's nothing we can do.
President Obama and the First Lady are joining Americans in making donations to help the victims in Haiti. They're donating $15,000 from their personal bank account to the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund.
Quick couple of stories here at home. The president is blaming the Democrats' stunning loss of their filibuster-proof Senate majority on his failure to connect to the economic frustrations of the middle class, which may be why the president's going to step up his pressure on Wall Street later this morning, announcing a plan to give the government new powers to limit the size of the nation's largest banks, as well as to stop them from trading on their own accounts. Markets, Miles?
Asian and European markets mixed. Futures down. The Dow gets underway at 10,603. S&P opening at 1,138. The NASDAQ at 2,291.
Our tech segment later on this morning, we're going to talk about Apple's rumored new IT project. But what do we want you to talk about? The Democrats' loss in Massachusetts. It's because of that 60 votes in the Senate reform rule. What do you think? It saved us from health care reform, or did it put a monkey wrench in the works of Congress? Do you think we should change the 60-vote rule in the Senate? Call us at 8778-MYTAKE or send us an email, mytake@thetakeaway.org. More on Haiti and Mullen in a moment. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Miles O'Brien.
Good morning.
We begin this morning with more of that wide-ranging conversation I had yesterday at the Pentagon with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. Haiti was just one part of the discussion. And a moment ago, we heard about how U.S. forces are working with the Haitian government. The Associated Press says the military has begun preparing about 100 tents at Guantanamo Bay for Haitian migrants. I asked Admiral Mullen, how important are facilities like Guantanamo Bay to transitioning the injured from Haiti?
We're aware of the medical support that is available in a place like Guantanamo. We haven't seen any large requirement for that right now. What's been the struggle initially with this is because those who have been injured so badly, many of them are crush injuries. We've seen infection set in, and many amputations have had to occur. So you just can't show up to a medical facility. If you will, it's not any kind of non-serious injury. We're really trying to focus on those major ones, but there are also significant additional medical requirements that we're trying to meet. It takes supplies, it takes distribution, and we're just not there yet. An awful lot of people working to try to get this right, and I see this as, along with food and water, as the most significant challenge.
Is the Gitmo facility available to you, however, for people to move off island?
It's an option, certainly an option that General Fraser and General Keane and USAID has as a part of this. But there are actually distribution issues. Literally, there are hospitals on Haiti that have rooms. Now, they're not located necessarily right downtown, so we think we need to work to distribute some of those patients who are in hospitals once they've received the care to move them out to some of these other areas.
All right, moving to other responsibilities. The president said, referring to the Christmas Day bombing attempt of the Northwest Airlines jet, that we are at war with al-Qaeda. Let's be clear. I believe those were the words. Is that your understanding, Admiral?
Yeah, it is very clear. This is a group, and I've said this over a long period of time, and it has been diminished somewhat in the last couple of years, but this is a group that's still trying to kill Americans. They're still trying to kill Westerners. The December 25th incident in Detroit is an example of that. The Headley arrest, the Zazi arrest, the five Americans who were recently picked up in Pakistan, all of that is very much associated with an overall strategic direction to still try to generate catastrophic attacks, killing innocent people, killing innocent Americans, as many as they can. And so in that regard, you bet we're at war with them.
Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke uses the term AFPAC a lot, and it's proliferated, I think, in a lot of discussions here in Washington and around the world. Since the surge was announced in Afghanistan, do you see the rules of engagement regarding the sanctity of the Pakistan-Afghan border evolving in some way that perhaps might give U.S. forces more of a reason to cross the border and operate inside Pakistan, either with drones or with actual infantry?
I see right now, I don't see any circumstances at this point where we're going to have any ground troops that would cross that border. I mean, that's just not part of it. I don't see it. It hasn't changed as a result of this strategy. The question about Afghanistan and Pakistan, what I have learned over the last two-plus years, having been heavily engaged in this, is it's not one country or another. They're two sovereign countries. Obviously, they border each other, and they're inextricably linked in many, many ways, in particular at that border. And that's where we believe al-Qaeda leadership resides. That's where the Afghan Taliban have a safe haven, and they use that safe haven to come into Afghanistan to kill Afghan citizens, to kill Afghan security forces, and to kill Americans. And so we're very focused on that and that border. That border is one that I believe is the epicenter of terrorism.
In terms of the rules of engagement with our relationship with Pakistan, help me to understand how a Pakistan military officer might be involved in drone surveillance on Pakistani territory. Would they initiate? Would they provide intelligence? Would they provide suggestions or targets? Or is it completely a U.S.-initiated operation?
Well, I don't talk about these operations in any kind of detail at all. Where we are in terms of what we're doing with the Pakistani military, and we've been doing it for some time, is we have provided training and support for their operations. I was there in December. I went up and spent the entire day in SWAT. And a year ago, there were many who had predicted SWAT would never return to what it was because the insurgents had basically taken it over. Well, the PAC MIL went in there, and they basically have turned it around, gotten rid of the insurgents. They achieved something many people predicted that they couldn't achieve, as an example. So, and we have worked to support them in terms of training, and I've been to the training center where we've done that, and it's really been exquisite training. They've worked hard, they've learned well, and they've had a big impact.
Finally, in the White House Situation Room that I happened to pass through yesterday, I noticed there were a number of digital clocks that sort of monitor places around the world that are obviously of interest. Of course, there was Washington, there was Kabul, there was Port-au-Prince. But I noticed that there was Sana'a, capital of Yemen. Is that an indication that surveillance on the part of the White House and security operations and perhaps the Pentagon, surveillance in Yemen is as important as the relief operation in Port-au-Prince right now or the operation in Kabul, that it has a similar priority?
Well, right now we're very focused on Haiti, and it really is at the top of the list. But we don't do that and ignore the other challenges. And I have been concerned for a significant period of time about the growing potential and now what I see in execution of a new safe haven for al-Qaeda leadership in Yemen. And it's clearly there. And it goes to Fort Hood and the Alaqui, who is the imam, who is actually an American citizen, spent a lot of time here, who is at the center of fostering not just Hassan, but a lot of other activities, as an example. And he resides in Yemen. And there are others. And so we've got an increased level of focus on Yemen. We've increased our support to the Yemen security forces. I don't just mean recently. We've actually done that over the last couple of years. We expect it to grow significantly over the next year and for the same reason, to enable them to get at this very serious threat, not just to us, but also to the people of Yemen and the government of Yemen. It is in certainly our list of top priorities that we're spending a lot of time on.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen. More of our conversation tomorrow. You can see more of the interview on thetakeaway.org. And at 15 minutes after the hour, let's check in on some stories we're following this morning. Miles?
2 days after his Senate win, Massachusetts Republican Senator-elect Scott Brown is heading to Washington. The time of Brown's swearing in remains a question. Meanwhile, President Obama spoke to ABC last night about the Democrats' loss in Massachusetts.
Here's my assessment of not just the vote in Massachusetts, but the mood around the country. The same thing that swept Scott Brown into office swept me into office. People are angry and they're frustrated.
Still, the president vows to press on with health care reform. We'll get more on that from our Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick, in just a few moments. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has been answering criticism that the aid effort in Haiti is moving too slowly.
Of course, I'm not satisfied about getting material and personnel in for everyone who needs it, but I am realistically aware of the difficulties.
Yesterday, the World Food Program said it distributed food to more than 200,000 people, but said it could take as long as a month to get food to the estimated 2 million who need it.
U.S. Secretary Gates is in Pakistan for unannounced meetings with military and civilian leaders. He says he plans to explain the latest U.S. strategy in Afghanistan and find out about Pakistan's latest offensive in the border areas. And finally, Americans are more than twice as likely to express a prejudice against Muslims than they are against Christians, Jews, or Buddhists, according to a new Gallup World Religion Survey. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching this morning. Miles?
Louise Story is up with a look at business. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.